If this was perfect, it wouldn't be.
Hello, this is Pedro de Permit, and thank you for listening to the Scalf Podcast. I know I sure as hell would never listen to it, but enjoy it while it lasts.
We're going live in 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. You're listening to the Scoffcast. I'm Hank Hershey. I'm the creative director at Southern Culture on the Fly magazine. We're here at the Deerwood Reserve in a cabin with a moon carved out of the bathroom door.
It's an old camp from like the 1900s.
It's an old camp from the 1900s, and there's a bunch of people here having a good time after the Forks of the River Fly Fishing Festival, which was hosted generously by Davidson River Outfitters and Headwaters Outfitters here in Rosman and Brevard, North Carolina. We decided to have a little bit of a check-in after our podcast a couple weeks ago, which was recorded about a week after Hurricane Helene came in western North Carolina. Hurricane Helene had a massive impact on a lot of different areas. And as we discussed on the podcast, you know, it affected different areas in different ways. And it didn't matter how it affected you. You were invited to this festival here in Brevard at the Deerwood Reserve. And we're so glad to have met so many people and to have rallied around this cause to raise money for people who took a big hit. After the hurricane, you know, there was a lot of mixed messaging about, you know, what was open, what was not open. And tourism, which is, you know, the main economic driver of this region, has obviously declined as a result of Hurricane Helene. And the main issue is that money that would have been spent here after Helene, regardless of the ecological and infrastructural impacts, did not get spent here. And a lot of guide services and fly shops took major financial losses as a result of that. And this festival, which was organized by Jess Whitmire, who's here tonight. Say hi, Jess.
Hey.
And Davidson River Outfitters, who was also here today, they decided to invite any shop who basically had an interest, an economic interest in the river. That included hiking, that included paddling, that included any sport and any business that had some financial stake in the status of the rivers, which bore the brunt of the damage as a result of the hurricane. And so a bunch of people gathered here today, and I just wanted to ask you, Jess and Chris, and Hannah, who's here. This event, the Forks of the River Fly Fishing Festival, is an annual thing, right? It's happened year after year after year. But this year, it's kind of taken on a different form. Jess, can you talk about why it's different this year?
Yeah, so, I mean, we talked a little bit about the history of the festival today. And, you know, in 2021, we came up with the idea for the festival as a way to raise funds to help the baseball team rebuild their baseball field after Fred. Tropical Storm Fred did a number on the Rosman community, and that was just 3 years ago, a little over 3 years ago, that Tropical Storm Fred flooded the Rosman community and Canton and Caruso. So that's, you know, relief efforts and community awareness is the foundation of this festival. So, of course, as soon as Helene hit, when Hannah and I were able to actually see each other and sit down, and about 3 weeks after the storm, with 3 weeks left to go to the festival date, we said this has to be a way to give back to the community. And Hannah says it best. I think Carl is the one that said it, is
yep.
We need to help as many people as quickly as possible. And when we knew that how we could help was this festival was already planned. We already had the location. Hannah and I knew we could shift it to try to support as many of the outdoor shops that we could reach. And I wasn't sure if it was going to be successful. Honestly, I've lost sleep over it for about a week, thinking that this is just not going to be what we thought it was. But after today, sitting here, it worked, and it was a great success, and it was because of this community, and not just the fly fishing community, but the outdoor community as a whole in Western North Carolina and Eastern Tennessee, and the people that support Headwaters and the other shops that participated.
The so money that it was hosted in Brevard by y'all, but who was invited and who showed up?
We invited everyone. We reached out on social media. We sent emails. We sent messages on Instagram. I made some personal phone calls to people that I knew. I reached out to anybody that I could, that I have relationships with. And of course, we posted it on our social media and tried to get as many people as we could to share it. We welcomed everyone. And the people that participated today are the ones that thanked us and filled out the form and said, yes, we need some help and we need some love and this, we want to be part of this community. And those are the ones that participated, and we're thankful for that. And I hope today was successful for them.
Hannah, you've been kind of working behind the scenes. I've exchanged a lot of text messages and Instagram messages with you. Have you been involved with this process so far?
So for the last, I guess, 4 years as of this year, from the start, I was kind of the one that was organizing, like, our vendor list and kind of the layout. Me and Jessica would go scout out places before we found Deer Road Reserve to where to, like, host the festival at as it was growing. Every year, kind of at a rapid rate that we really didn't expect at first. So I kind of make contact with the vendors every year, figure out kind of what we're doing, what the layout of the land is with Jessica and Deerwood Reserve here. So now the second year, they've been awesome about, you know, kind of being super easy just to slide back in almost the same plan that we had last year as they were working on the event center. So it made it a little bit easier this year to kind of, like, have the vendor layout. Worked with a couple of our reps that have been really awesome. I was super fortunate to have some really, really awesome connections through this with our raffles that we were getting this year. We hosted a trip last year to West Yellowstone, Montana with Big Sky Anglers and Golden Stone Inn, which is like a lodging kind of thing that they have through their shop directly. So those guys, they were super generous. As soon as we got home, actually, we just hosted a trip out there. I guess, was it the first week of September?
Second
week of September, I guess. So we were out there doing a host trip for that. Chris and Justin Whalen and our clients flew home, traveled home. Me and Andy ended up staying an extra week for some family vacation. And pretty much as soon as we got back from that to kind of, like, finalize the plans for the festival as far as what, you know, we had already been planning for the last 2 or 3 months, all of a sudden changed overnight. And I was actually thinking of this the other day, Lydia. Like, I had just sent Lydia an email like, hey, we're going to schedule all this stuff. And, like, the next day I had a series of emails that said, you know, actually, I'm not even going to do this because, like, we're going to be doing, you know, storm updates. Like, let's just kind of postpone these until later. And, like, little did we know, the next morning we would wake up to, you know, the devastation of everything that had happened. And I actually didn't see that until, like, 2 days ago. And when I read it, I was like, dang, like, we really, like, it happened that fast. So it was quick. That unexpected.
So y'all had to pivot this event that was already established.
Yes.
And instead of doing, you know, sort of just a general community benefit festival, it turned into what?
Well, we instantly saw a lot of GoFundMes set up, and Western North Carolina has some amazing nonprofits. Habitat for Humanity is very strong in Transylvania County. We have several really strong nonprofits, and we had already seen, like, Woody and Shannon, who played for free at the festival today, had already set up a nonprofit and had money coming in. I mean, Scoff, you guys had already had a great, your nonprofit was supporting fly shops and had donations coming in. So when we were thinking, like, what do we do? Like, do we support another GoFundMe or a nonprofit? Or do we just reach out to these fly shops and outdoor shops and say, what do you need? So I called a few people and asked, and they said, we're thankful for everything, but we just need money coming in to keep payroll going and the lights on and knowing that we have a spring ahead of us, because right now we don't even have time to think. I mean, this is at this time, Chris was, you guys were, some of y'all were still in Burnsville helping Kyle clean out people's basements. There was still so much recovery efforts going on that not a lot of people had time to think. And then other shops that weren't as affected were just ghost towns, and their trips were canceled left and right, and people were just not working. Guides were off the water. So I just said, when I looked at Hannah, I said, we just need to use QR codes, and money just needs to go directly to where these shops want the money to go. It needs to go directly into the hands of the shops and the guides that need it. So that's kind of why we set the festival up the way we did today, instead of like a blanket nonprofit. It just, to us, it seemed, and as business owners, it just seemed to make more sense to.
It does make a lot of sense, because right at the end of the day, you know, we've raised, I think, around $3,300 on our, $33,000, sorry, on our GoFundMe, and we've had to pay GoFundMe about $1,000 of that in transaction fees. And the way that y'all have set this thing up is, you know, you spend money with the people who need it, we'll reward you for that, rather than we'll collect money on somebody's behalf and get it to them. Obviously, there's a lot of different ways to collect money and raise money on people's behalf. And not any way is going to satisfy or maybe be equivalent to the status quo where people are showing up to shops and booking trips. But in order to stimulate some kind of, you know, push for fundraising, I think y'all did a really fantastic job here. I saw a lot of folks here who, you know, were representing guide services and fly shops, and mostly little guide services. You know, the people that I was surprised to see were folks that I had never even heard of, like, you know, these little shops and these little outfits that are, you know, just a bunch of kids that graduated from App State and just wanted to get out there. And, you know, a lot of times, you know, the fly fishing establishment spends a lot of time gatekeeping, right? We talk about like, he hadn't put in the work, he's not a real guide, or like he just started.
I am looking at Chris right now. We had this same conversation this morning.
He hasn't put in the, you know, like they don't deserve
they
to
don't
be
even
here.
Have permits. What are they doing? But they're trying to do what we all do.
Yeah, Chris, talk about who you saw today and who you missed, who you saw today that you were happy to see. Just, I mean,
man,
you're a guy.
Everyone I saw today, I was happy to see. I was, you know, I'm not going to say disappointed. I was kind of sad not to see some folks that I know could use the push of business. But, and they know who they are, and you guys can find out who they are, and that you need to support them, because they're all good. We're all good at what we do. One thing I wanted to say, too, was what was cool was, if you looked at the outfitters, the guide services, the shops, everybody that participated, I mean, it stretched literally from the Virginia line, North Carolina, Virginia line, all the way to the South Carolina, North Carolina line. I mean, it is all of Western North Carolina is affected by it, because, like you've said, the tourism, man. I mean, here in Brevard, in Transmania County, it is like January traffic. There ain't people here. There's no one here.
Yeah.
The past 2 weeks, I had booked fully out. All of those folks have rescheduled to next year. You know, and it's like, I understand. And honestly, you know, it'll be better next year. But the fishing's still good right now. We just got to go and step out of our comfort zone and go do something and learn. And, you know, but you just got to roll with the punches. But there are folks that I wish were here that have also been mentors to me. They know who they are. They can benefit from it a lot. And they need it. You know,
one of the kids that were with the one of the smaller shops today, or guide services, was so like it filled my heart today, because he came up to me almost with tears in his eyes and just gave me a big hug and just how thankful he was. And this kid is very young and just getting started, and the genuine thankfulness of just letting him participate and welcoming into the community and just Drink. Letting them be a part of it. Oh my gosh. Not this again. Cheers. Letting it cheers. It meant a lot. It meant a lot for him to come up, even though he called me ma'am.
Ugh. We'll kill him later.
I mean, I get it. I respect
Is
him for
ma'am
that.
Is ma'am better than Miss Jessica?
No, I like Miss Jessica.
It's Miss Jessie.
No, no. I will throw this at you, Hank.
Miss Jess.
I like that better than ma'am. But I do respect him for using ma'am because that's how you're raised. You know somebody that's been raised by a good mama.
I got called sir 5 times on the water today by a kid who was my age. He was like.
Was it because he was being a smart aleck?
No, it's because he's from Alabama and he's raised well.
He's raised well. Yeah, you got, you know. Yeah. The same kids that ran the llamas in. They
crushed
it.
That was
it.
Them. That was
they
them.
Raised the, they had. Yes, sir. It was awesome.
So, so you guys saw some people that were grateful to be in this environment. You guys saw, you know, maybe some people missing, and that's all right. But I think we talked a little bit last episode about just maybe some pridefulness. And it pridefulness can be misconstrued maybe as a flaw. And I think that in a scenario like there has been in the last couple of weeks, pridefulness is nothing to scoff at. No pun intended. But it's
Southern culture on the fly.
I think there's a lot of people here who honest to God have been too busy to be here. And there are people that I've talked to who need help and have neglected themselves for the sake of others and who will not show up to a community or charity focused event.
Community drank.
Sorry guys. But you know, there's some folks missing here who have been doing important work, and I think the people who are missing today maybe had not better things to do, but in their mind more important things and service, which has struck me as the most important value in this area. Can you guys talk a little bit more about the kind of service that y'all have seen as far as what fly fishing guides, shop owners, et cetera, have done in this region in the last couple of weeks?
And I'm going to start this off. And Kyle Burnett, you know, in Southern Drifters Outfitters, he's not guiding anymore this year. He's out of Burnsville. He lives up Bowens Creek Road. He is spending every day. Now he's on a hosted trip right now, and he deserves it. He needs to be where he's at to get a little break. But they are working every day. Him and other folks have lost just about everything they got, you know, are out there every day helping the community that they grew up in.
Drink.
Oh.
No, I'm fine with drinking that. I mean, that's what it is.
Yeah.
They are out there, and they are busting their butts. They don't care about when their next paycheck's coming in. All they care about is the people around them taking care of them. Dave, and I can't remember your last name. I'm so sorry. High Country Guide Service, Boone's Fly Shop.
Dave Stelling.
Stelling. He and I, we had an Instagram or Facebook war about 3 years ago. It was awesome. But I ran into him on Bowens Creek, and it was the first time I'd seen him in person since that. And dude, we hugged, and we just started working together. And, like, those boys, him and Sky and Chris and all those guys from High Country, Alyssa, they were all up there busting their butts, helping out. When their community, too, up in Boone, had all kinds of issues. But they were taking – that's another drink. I said community again. That's two of them.
That's been true of a lot of folks up in the Boone area. I've seen Grayson up at Deep South Co. Outfitters. He's still got 4 feet of silt in his garage, and his boat's under, you know, pounds, yeah. 1,000 pounds of river mud that got flooded. And he said, you know what I'm doing? I checked in on him on Sunday. I texted him. I was like, hey, dude, we got a $5,000 check for you from this GoFundMe. What do you need it for? He's like, well, I could really use some gas money. I'm going to pull trucks out of the river this week.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, how's your boat doing? Have you got a new boat? Well, I haven't gone and dug it out of my garage yet, but I'll let you know when I'm done pulling everybody else's shit out of the river.
Yeah,
it's
putting
insane.
Other people first, man. It's, yeah. It's taking care of the folks around you, you know, and that's even like all the folks there, because y'all can't see right now because this is a podcast. There's probably, what, a dozen, 15 people in here?
And more outside.
And way more outside. And they have all been doing the same thing. all through West North Carolina. We've got nurses who have been dealing with all kinds of stuff. We've got
How's that nuclear waste mud doing?
That was fantastic.
But, you know, like, listen, first responders, fleet managers. Yeah, I'm talking to you. No. Yeah, I see you. Yeah, but no,
there's a volunteer firefighter who managed to not cut his toes off.
We have everybody here, and this is just a small little group, has touched a pile of people around them that you'll never fathom. The amount of interaction you have with folks and helping and doing it one good deed that then triggers somebody else doing a good deed, it piles up and it helps out in stuff like this, you know?
Yeah, the power of paying it forward kind of accelerates itself in times of need. And I think I've just been honestly floored by the selflessness of all, everybody in this area. You know, it's the fly fishing world is so small. You know, you hear about a little thing that pops up. It's like, oh, you hear this guy's guiding on Cataloochee now? Oh, interesting. And you think, well, I got to protect my business and yada, yada. And it's the same everywhere in the country. You know, you think, well, it's a small, maybe competitive industry. And then all of a sudden when everybody gets their shit rocked, it's like, well, these are my people. Actually, these are not people I'm competing with. And that it was so cool to see all of those folks show up, you know, people that we probably, you know, that you may never have paid attention to, that were just humble and honest and asked for help and showed up. And then all of the folks who have never made a dollar off of the fly fishing sport and just came and said, hey, I went to the ATM yesterday and I brought $300 cash and I'm not walking away with any money. So tell me where to spend it. Well, I think that was such a cool thing to see today. Just to, like, watch somebody, you know, I was selling stickers that said, you know, Jets gears are,
I love fried chicken. Yeah,
the Scoff merch table was a beacon of depravity amongst all of the wholesome businesses that were there. But it was just so cool to see people open up their wallets and say, hey, it's for a good cause, you know.
Well, I think I talked a little bit about this today, but, you know, we're in the fly fishing community. There's many times where we are competitors and it is easy to focus on that piece of the industry. But at the end of the day, if we're not all successful and we're not all here and we're not all standing and we're not all the best we can be, we all hurt from it. You know, if we're not all being the best conservationist, if we're not all providing the best service to our customers, if we're not all making our communities a better place, drink for that. Sorry. It's, you know, we all suffer from it. So it's not necessarily that we're competitors. We have to be in this together. We all, and this is going to be harder than COVID was for this area, because this area was somewhere that people wanted to come during COVID. This was a place that got people through COVID. So a lot of these businesses have been doing very well the last couple of years. And the economy has not been easy this year. So it was already a leaner year for a lot of us. It was already a low water year. It was a drought all year. So guide trips had already been, for the fishing industry, guide trips had already been a little weird. So it was, we were really banking on October and November. So we want everybody to make it through until spring, and it's going to take events like this. It's going to take us all working together and all supporting each other for us all to be here in April. And that's our main, and we know that as people that are in the industry and we live it every day, we know how tough it's going to be to make it to April. And we want to help everybody else make it to April too, at the end of the day.
We all work together. We all share the same clientele. Hell, earlier I was over there with Brownie Lyles, hanging out by his boat in Davis Park, and his son Stokes, and see Landon Lipke, works at DRO. Then Zach Hart comes in, works for DRO. We all just start hanging out, talking. We all fish with the same folks, you know, and we're all good friends. And that's the thing is, this area, everybody shares the love amongst the industry. You know, you've got, I almost said the C word, but you've, community.
Oh, dang it!
That one.
Y'all had to make it weird. But we all share the same clientele. We all offer different things. We all have different personalities with our guides.
Because we forget at the end of the day, that's what people want. That's what customers want. It's not about the fish you catch. It's really not. You can post, you can be a guide and you can post pictures of massive brown trout and great rainbows and wild brook trout. You can post whatever fish pictures you want on Instagram. At the end of the day, it is about the connections you have with your clients and the fact that your clients can have a relationship with you and have conversations with you and get to know you and that are your friends. And that is Western. That's just the culture of guiding in Western North Carolina. I don't know, like very few, maybe the July traffic outside of the July trips, September through May, the clients that we have coming in the shop are people that we consider friends. And a lot of them do guide with shops. They guide with Brookings once or twice a year. They guide with us. They guide with DRO. They go to Hunter Banks. They fish 10 to 15 times throughout Western North Carolina with all the different outfitters. And it's because they just love the people. They love fishing with different people and the different personalities, and those that's are the, what it's all about.
And those are the folks that are the backbone of this recovery
effort. And they're the people that showed up today.
Maybe we won't get to fish this year, but we'll help out so that we can 100%. Fish in the future. I think a lot of shops, maybe including y'all, might rely on in certain seasons an influx of folks who maybe have never fished, who are being introduced to the sport and are getting messaging from outside of the industry. And I was wondering, Hannah, how in your experience in messaging and sort of you know, communicating the fallout from this and rallying people around it, what's been your sort of take on, you know, what galvanizes people and how are you recruiting help for the sport?
Yeah. So I think kind of banking off what Jess said, I think, you know, each shop in Western North Carolina has kind of its niche clientele, to a certain degree. And just like our shop where our clients are our friends and have turned into family, you know, in a lot of scenarios, a lot of those people that follow our social media, we try really hard to keep that stuff really active, really up to date. A lot of people have come to trust with what we put out there. So we have a team at the shop, you know, between myself, Jessica, Danielle, and a few other people. Like we, you know, whether it's reading charts, reading graphs, like whether it's getting, you know, updates from Rivergrass, from Chris, or, you know, some of our other guides, like we take the data that we release very seriously because we do realize that, you know, come June, come July, whenever we get those people that are, you know, even now starting to book vacations for next year, you know, if they hop on our website or on our Facebook and it's, you know, maybe they've either not seen information that's true that's coming from us or other relatable and reliable, you know, local sources, there's a lot of conflicting information out there.
Sure.
Not in any kind of bad way, but I call a lot of the people we fish with in like July and August, like your Win in Rome clients, like they're in the mountains. You know, they live wherever they've came from. This is maybe their first time here. They want to go trout fishing with their family. They want the nice picture, and that's awesome. I'm really glad that we're, you know,
and they're great people, and it's fun.
Yeah, and like we're glad that we can provide that experience for them, and it's cool to show people like kind of our neck of the woods and introduce them. Like I remember one time we had a client, I think me and Chris were on a trip, a girl had never seen a field before, and it was actually kind of cool to be like, yeah, this is a cornfield, and we got to take a shower like the river and everything and this whole experience. So when those people are looking forward to next summer to book trips, I think it's just important now to share up-to-date information that's very straightforward and very honest, kind of with some transparency, saying this is what we're dealing with, but this is what we're hopeful for in the near future, and, you know, in the future beyond, in the next season, that you guys can expect.
It's been so interesting to see how fly shops have become sort of hubs for information. Like, mm-hmm. you know, as a fly fishing magazine, you know, we're sort of also trusted to have information about the industry, information about what's going on in the sport, in the region. And obviously that can get overwhelming sometimes. We try to amplify what messages are already out there. There's only a few of us. We're not a news organization per se. You know, we're trying to figure out how to basically get in touch with the angler and amplify their sort of general sentiment. I'm curious about how news has spread over the last couple weeks, how y'all have been in touch, and what do you think the outlook is for, maybe Chris, we can start with you, for what's the outlook for the next 6 months for guides? I mean, I know a lot of guys have canceled trips and they're all still working, you know, chainsaws, and
the next 6 months, it's weird. So, like, I've had, all of y'all who know me know I suck at communicating. And that is just, let's hear it, Alan. Come on, talk about it. I hate having a cell phone. I hate being in reach with people right away because they expect instant response. But I've had a lot of folks reach out wanting to book trips and stuff of that nature. But it was all during the event, and it was like, I've got other things to do. I'm not going to sit on my phone and respond to folks, as shitty as that sounds, but like, there's more pressing needs that are happening. So.
Keep going.
God, y'all were all damn making faces at me.
That was not you, at Alan.
But, so right now, this year, I'm going to head back down to South America to work for this winter. I'll be down there for 4 months. But as far as next spring fishing goes, and even this winter around this area, fishing has been killer. I mean, public water, private water, but everything's been fishing good. The wild water's been fishing well. It has been fishing, even with newer anglers who were trying to learn how to navigate that water where fish are real spooky. You can still go in there. You can catch them. They're having fun, they're eager to eat. Private water fish as well.
Delayed harvest will happen in District 9.
Will be getting stocked in District 9.
District 9.
What? So there was some fear early on about hatcheries getting wiped out. I mean, I saw a few hatcheries that were destroyed.
Yeah.
But now the NC Wildlife, North Carolina Wildlife, is saying that a few streams in each county will be stocked for the delayed harvest.
They're not stocking all delayed harvest streams, but they are stocking all District 9 streams and a few other district streams, but not all. They have their map updated with dates.
But every county is going to get some fish, it sounds like.
It sounds like, yeah.
Yeah.
In District 9, yeah.
In District 9, so.
The Tuck,
the East Fork, Little River.
I saw Fires and Snowbird and all of them were getting some. Yeah.
Those counties. So yeah, on the NC Wildlife, they've updated their maps. It's on there, and they don't have an exact date like they used to. They have kind of a window,
right?
Because they've lost trucks, so some of their stocking trucks are down, so they are just putting like a window of when it will be stocked. We won't get exact dates, so be patient with them, people. And the shops won't know when those exact dates are either. They're just going to stock within those windows.
Have y'all heard from guides who said, I'm out?
No.
We've heard from paddling shops that have said they're out. We had a couple emails back from some paddling and sup shops in the Asheville area that lost absolutely everything.
You said sup shops?
Yeah, like sup board rentals. And
stand up paddle boards?
Yeah.
Okay.
That just said that they are done completely. But I haven't heard of any fly shops that have said that they are out.
No, they're all, I mean, we're all resilient, man. We we're all going to bust our ass and try and make it work.
But it's that's right now. I will say right now, we can say that. I am just, I think March is going to be different. I do think that people are going to have to know that this is, we're coming off of a little high because this was a great festival and it was successful. And we have a couple weeks of warm weather, but winter is coming and people just don't know. Like I'm not being like trying to be really negative, but winter is tough here in Western North Carolina. As a guide, winters can be, they're slim. They're always a little slim. So y'all
rely on trips from October.
You rely on, your income comes March through October.
Yeah.
March through November. November can be pretty solid, but April, late March to early April through November is, you know, the time to make money. And October is one of the, probably the second highest grossing month for guides.
Is fishing any good in the winter?
Oh, dude, it's killer.
It is. Well, but why it's don't really, people come but up it's here? Hard. It's just hard to get people to come here and it's fish. It's uncomfortable. Yeah.
I think
it's,
if people knew that it was good.
It's hard for, it's hard to get people to come here. Yeah. We try. I mean, we have. I mean, every, I mean,
it's
hard to
be growing a little every year though.
It is. It's getting
people
better.
People seem to be like adjusting and wanting to come here.
I think you've
year.
Got a major opportunity here to say that, you know, yeah, fall's peak season.
The tourism development authorities have been doing a lot of work on marketing to like the Canadian markets and the north, like the New York markets, and where their winters are just really tough, and say, hey, come here. You still, it's still winter, but it's not dry. It's not a miserable winter, and you can still fish, you can still hike, you can still mountain bike, you can do all these things. And I think that would be a wonderful message for the tourism places of, in Western North Carolina to really focus on. Cause, but even then saying that, I just think, I don't know how many guides are in Western North Carolina. There's a lot of families behind those guides.
Sure.
And that's a lot of mouths to feed when most of those mouths lost a full month of October.
Sure.
You're not going to have a normal November. And then it's just going to be getting really creative on getting through the winter. And we want all those families to be here. We want all those guides to be here and be successful when people will come back. The spring will come. And when spring comes, people will start coming back to Western North Carolina. It's not going to be the same. I know some of these communities are not going to be even ready in the spring. There's still going to be some communities that aren't going to be back on their feet come spring 2025. They're still going to take more time, but they're going to be closer, and there is going to be more tourism, and it's going to be much needed.
We've talked a little bit about the, let's talk numbers a little bit, if you guys are comfortable with that. Scoff, you know, committed $6,500 to Headwaters to cover your expenses for the
gravel,
which wasn't covered by your,
yeah,
by
insurance.
Your insurance.
Appreciate the hell out of that too.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, that's not to say that wasn't me asking for a thank you. That was just putting some numbers out there, right? Like
huge.
There's a lot of money that's been raised up here. You know, we're talking about, you know, Maggie Valley raised tens of thousands of dollars.
Cedar Mountain, the community in Cedar Mountain held a 1-day music festival with their shops and raised like $100,000.
Yeah, Woody Platt's their benefit concert in Brevard the other night, that raised
$85,000 on the same night that the concert in Charlotte raised.
Yeah, Luke Combs
24.
Got 2.5, or was it
24.5 million dollars?
Okay, so that's insane. Yeah. That's a lot of money getting pumped into here.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But I think our listeners are interested in hearing, where is the money really going? Who is it helping?
Well, I mean, I can just speak on, like, for people like us, especially in the Rosman community, and I know there's some similar cases to us in the Canton and Caruso area. We just came through Fred again. And we just had very similar losses to what we saw in Fred. So very similar expenses, out of pocket and insurance claims.
Could you put a number on that? If you're comfortable with it.
$40,000 ish in that range. More this time because we were closed. We didn't close in Fred. What? How long were we closed in Fred? A week?
I don't even think it was that long.
Was it a week or two?
I heard from a few shops that
Fred,
you know,
closing
for a week in peak season means losing.
But
tens
Fred
of
was
thousands
all,
of
but
dollars.
Fred was yeah. also in August. Mm-hmm. So when we closed in Fred, I think it was, well, we were closed for 2 weeks. We opened back up the day we all left for my bachelorette party.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
And I wanted to cancel it, but my dad wouldn't let me because he said I had to.
I forgot about that.
Yes.
You're right.
So,
did you go to Florida, Bama, or what happened?
We went to Asheville.
Oh, okay.
We stayed local.
That's a very
local.
It's very pragmatic bachelorette party.
But so this year we were shut down for 3 weeks.
We were shut down. Well, we didn't have power for 2 weeks, so we had to sit there and watch. There was nothing we could do for 14 days.
And in that time, y'all lost out on.
Well, yeah,
40 guide trips
in October. I would probably estimate most shops make 25 to 30% of their income, if not more. That's probably not even. I can't even think numbers right now. Depends on how many. And we're totally different because we have the paddling and tubing side of it. But I guarantee you, like, the losing October is pushing the 100,000, if not more, range for most outdoor businesses.
Yeah. So when you put
like
that
restaurants
into, yeah.
and Airbnbs,
oh my gosh, yeah,
like just the amount of money that is in that comes in October and November,
and that money is what's expected to sustain y'all through the winter time because of the slow mm-hmm. season, right?
Yeah,
yeah.
So, you know, you think about, well, we're gonna have a $80,000-$90,000, maybe $150,000 month in October. And then we'll be able to pay our guides through the winter.
Yeah.
Who will maybe pick up one or two or three trips a week.
And this year was also kind of weird because, like Jess said earlier, like we came out of a super, super dry summer. I mean, there was, you know, it kind of got to the point at one point where it was just like we hadn't had rain in weeks and it was so hot. So we were running those super early morning trips. And I mean, I feel like I can probably speak on behalf of most of our guides, if not all of them. You know, I had a lot of clients that wanted to come fish in the summer that were good repeat clients. And I was like, you know, like I see you guys, you know, two or three times a year, come see me in October. Like it's really hot right now. We haven't had rain. If y'all are going to be coming back into town, like let's just fish in October when, you know, fishing's good. And then, you know, little did we know that when October hit,
man,
that we would be here. And I think, you know, if I was assuming correctly, a lot of other people probably did that with their
yeah.
really, you know, core base of clients. It was like, you know, just come back when it's good, because right now it's
come back when it's good.
Yeah,
oh, wait.
Like we're
there
struggling
no
a little bit.
The
fish are struggling. Yeah, and like we didn't have a whole lot of people. You know, even in the summer, like we had a lot of people. It was actually interesting. I feel like this was first year for whatever reason, whether people are just becoming more educated or what on it. Like we had a lot of people coming in the shop already with the assumption of like it's kind of hot. Like we're going to be coming back, you know, on a family trip in October. Like, would it be cool if we booked a trip then? It's like, yeah, of course. Like that's what we're looking for here.
Yeah,
and so it's kind of been strange, you know, now looking out, not missing summer because we had a great summer, but, you know, having a little bit of that downtime in summer moving into a fall where you were totally expecting that spike.
Yeah.
Of maybe even being a little bit more busy, you know, in the fall than we are even in the summer.
Yeah.
And then kind of knowing that you kind of have missed out on the fall season now moving into winter.
Sure.
For a lot of the guys too, like Chris was saying, that, you know, they're not going to be guiding. We're still seeing some trips come through here and there, but like there's a lot of people, they're not going to be guiding.
Most of the shops I've seen have said no more trips this year.
Yeah.
We're going to be out, you know, on our private water. We're mm-hmm. going to be out, in our community. Sorry.
I'm out of beer,
you know,
man, can't break.
With chainsaws and backhoes and stuff. And,
yeah.
You know, most folks have basically said this season is shot.
Yeah.
Let's see if we can recoup some funds with throwing concerts and food trucks in the space. You know, I was really hoping to see Doug McKelvey here. He's got Mountain Fly Outfitters in Canton.
Mm-hmm. And, I've talked to him via email.
Doug's an interesting fella. He and my wife actually know each other from childhood in Montgomery, but he's basically pivoted. He said, you know, we're not running trips this fall. And so we're going to do kids fishing camps and throw some concerts and just try to bring people into Canton.
Yeah.
And make some money that way. And I think, you know, for the larger shops that have a steady revenue stream the rest of the year, you know, taking a ding in October is a big deal, but it's not life or death. And for some of the smaller shops that are really just getting started or are maybe focused on establishing themselves, are going to have a lot of trouble. And so that's why we've chosen at SCOFF to, you know, kind of allocate most of that GoFundMe fundraising towards the folks that, you know, probably wouldn't make it without that money. So we've, as a group, we've decided to allocate a fair share of the money that's left in our GoFundMe to the smaller outfits, one of them being Doug's Place in Canton.
Awesome.
One of them being Grayson's Place up in Elk Park. It's called Deep South Co. Outfitters. He's got, I mean, this kid's incredible. He's got 4 feet of silt in his garage, mm-hmm. his raft, his drift boat. It's an old NRS drifter. They stopped making them, but they're kind of like the inflatable drift boat
situation. I used to run
situation.
One. I sold it to a fellow in Maryland.
He sent me a picture of it, and you can't see the trailer in his garage. It's parked in his garage. You can't see the trailer because there's 4 feet of silt in there. And he said, you know, honestly, I don't really know what the state of my boat is because I haven't had time to dig it out. I was like, well, why don't you dig it out, man? We'll get you a new boat. And he's like, well, I said, he told me, I asked him on Sunday, this past Sunday, October 25th, almost a month after the hurricane. I said, hey, man, what's your boat? What's the status with your boat? You know, I've got a few companies like Upriver Boatworks and Rio Craft and a few different raft manufacturers that said, well, we'd love to help this guy out. He sounds like he needs some help. I was like, hey, dude, what's going on with your boat? And he's like, honestly, I haven't looked at it in like a couple of weeks. And I was like, what are you talking about? Like, get on the water, make some money. He said, well, I got waders on, and I'm going to go help my buddy pull trucks out of the river this week. So I've canceled my trips for the fall, and I'm going to be out, you know, working. And, you know, maybe we'll dig out my garage when I get back. And it's stories like that. It's like, you know, Grayson and Kyle at Southern Drifters, and it's stories like that where folks have almost completely neglected their businesses, which makes it hard to support them because it's like, hey, guys, we're trying to keep you open. You know, maybe take some of this money.
But they're doing what
they got to do. And it's a beautiful, beautiful thing to see. And I just hope that the people who have never asked for or never even wanted the recognition for it get it, because this, you know, as a magazine, as a company, you know, Southern Culture on the Fly has really tried to keep our finger on the pulse, and we want people to know what people like them in this region are capable of and what they've been giving up for everyone else. I was just wondering, you know, just tell me what y'all have seen, because I've only been able to see so much.
Well, I mean, just to kind of circle back there, you know, y'all's donation to us, the $6,500, covers gravel that does not get touched by insurance, comes from a fund that we just had to go through with Fred. And Fred was actually worse gravel wise because Fred was, what a lot of people were experiencing now, we experienced with Fred. Fred took a lot of that out for us. So this time we had actually more sand than we had with Fred. So our gravel, we still lost a lot of gravel, but it didn't take as much to get things level and put back together. But paying the power bill is basic, or paying the gravel bill is basically keeping the power bill on for us. And instead of having to worry about those things in January, February, March, we're able to know that we can keep staff on. And those are conversations, like, and especially in family businesses and family fly shops, this is not a call to, like, corporate to say, hey, we need to cut this person or this account. These are family conversations sitting at the table going, we can't pay this person anymore. So we're going to have to tell them we can't pay them in January and February. We can see them in April. We understand if they need to move on. Or, hey, we can pay you this much. These are the hours that we can cover to at least get you to March. And those are much better conversations. And we're still going to have some of those conversations, but donations and like today, events like today and what you guys did for us, those allow us to not have as many of those conversations. And that's at the end of the day. And it's tough to talk about that. And it's not the most fun conversations and a lot of people. And I'm, you know, you don't go into details because it's, you know, personal business, but there are a lot of people having those conversations. And there'll be a lot of those conversations had over this winter at a lot of different small businesses, and it's heartbreaking. And I just hope that people can get through it, and I hope that people can reach out and get the grants and find ways and use the resources that are out there, because whether it's outdoor recreation or restaurants, there are a lot of pathways to help. And I hope people take it if they need it. I hope that pride doesn't get in the way. It is hard to accept a gesture from a friend. You guys are friends. You gave us a good gesture. That's for us, that was easy to accept, and we're so thankful. It's not so easy sometimes for people to apply for grant applications or FEMA money or SBA disaster loans. And I just hope that people, if they need it, they use it, you know, and I hope that, they know that they need to do, it's survival of the fittest, and you got to do what you got to do, and you have to make good decisions, and don't let pride get in the way, and just reach out for help if you need it.
I think, you know, whether you need help or not, there are people who are trying to help you, whether you say you need help or not, I should say, there are people here who want to help you. You know, as a family of fly fishermen in this region, especially locally, I think I speak for everyone when I say that, you know, nobody wants to see you go. And so hopefully if you need help, you have the resources and the information you need to find it. And if you don't, and you're hearing this podcast, you reach out, because there's plenty of folks here who can connect you with somebody who can get you at least a little bit of help. We've been able to raise a little bit of money thanks to everyone who's donated. I can't express how thankful we are and how thankful everyone in this industry is for all of your contributions. It's so hard to say everything that I'm saying while I'm looking at Chris Franson's kid in his underwear sneaking
what
around
are you
the kitchen
looking at right now?
hoping for a buffalo wing or a I just saw him reach for the maker's mark. Get this feral animal out of the kitchen. Wow. But what I wanted to get across is that whether you've said so or not, there are people who care about you. There are people who want to see you get through this season, which is, all things considered, shout out Gavin Griffin, just a season. Unfortunately, these seasons probably will be more common in the future. And by season, I mean, you know, tragic weather events. But that's why you got us. You've got Southern Culture on the Fly, which is not me and Alan and Sam and John and Scott and Mike. It's a massive community of people who are here for you. So if you're listening to this podcast and you run a small business in the fly fishing industry and you feel like you've been affected by this hurricane, all you got to do is send us an email. We might not be able to give you a check for $5,000, but we might be able to connect you with the people who can help. So I'm going to wrap up this old episode by saying
community.
Community.